and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 524. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me today from his room of green, it's a new person, a strange and wonderful interloper into the podcast world. It's Dave Aubrey, people.
Hello there.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty fine. Pretty okay on this Friday.
Pretty fine. You've been floating around the Pocket Gamer universe for a long time now. You are, in many ways, a spine of the Pocket Gamer skeleton when it comes to things like game reviews and opinions on anime.
I do have a lot of opinions on anime. It's just because so much of it is bad when it could be good.
I agree with the first part. Now, you've been referred to on this show. We've actually talked about you. Whenever I reference kind of reviews, it tends to be like done by Dave Aubrey. Or specifically the anime stuff, because I will read out the thing and say, I don't know, but Dave liked it.
That's what matters, really.
That's me go-to. For people, like, explain yourself. Like, what is it that you do over here at PG?
So, over on Pocket Gamer, what you'll mainly find me doing is guides and how-tos on a lot of games, including some full walkthroughs. You will also find me doing the occasional opinion editorial and the odd review for games. I will complain about anime, and I will complain about the games industry, which is weird, because I seem to dislike it more than I like it, but it's just how it's rolled out.
I've seen your Twitter feed, yes.
Yeah.
It's very easy to get moany about stuff, and I think it's important that we have dissenters, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
If everyone's evangelical in this blind way where everyone says everything's amazing, well, that's clearly nonsense. Equally, if everyone's just constantly hateful of everything, that's another bad way. But no, having actual critical opinions of stuff, even our very own industry, is kind of the point of all of this. You've got to self-analyze, and I think a lot of the problems that we have, as in pretty much every walk of society, is this inability to look inwards at all and be like, maybe that thing I'm complaining about someone else doing, maybe I do that from time to time.
Yeah,
maybe that's bad. Maybe I should work on that. Luckily, this is a nice quiet week, Dave. You've come on and nothing of any interest whatsoever has happened in the mobile world.
Wonderful.
It's good to be zen, isn't it? It's nice.
Can we clock off now?
Ideally, but I think something's just coming through the facts. Oh. This is the facts I get in my ear. That's how faxes work. I never had a fax. I may be older than some, but I never had a fax. Okay, so it's all gone mental. It's what let's cut to the chase. I'm going to bury the lead. It's gone nuts. So the mobile world, specifically Epic, Apple, Fortnite, and to some degree Game Pass, is basically throwing the whole mobile model into a complete, I'm going to say, tizzy, because that's a cute, quaint word my mum would use. And so we've got to talk about that. That's very important, because everyone's got an incredibly hot take and we've got to throw our lukewarm ones into the mix.
Got one or two.
Lovely. But we also have the new releases and things as well. So don't worry, we will be chatting about, Neverwinter Nights and what's that one? Circulus. We've got that going on as well. We've got Machines Garden. Eve Echoes is coming. Loads of stuff to kick off with. But first, it's the news. Then and Epic, two extremely large billion-dollar companies who are now, as it seems, at each other's throats. One is portraying themselves as a kind of Robin Hood figure, standing up for the little guy, and Apple, the evil overlord who is trying to brainwash us, 1984 style. There's so much to deal with this, beyond just the initial cringe of it all. But for those who somehow don't know, Fortnite's been pulled from the App Store. It's also been pulled from Google Play, but we'll get to that in a second. The reason it was pulled, as outlined by Apple in its response, was that Fortnite basically bypassed Apple's in-app purchase system. So we've talked loads about Apple's walled garden on the show and the fact that Apple are very, very kind of restrictive and cautious about what they put out on the App Store and what they allow to happen, especially in terms of building shops within shops. They don't want their, if you put an app on the App Store, they don't want you to have your own little shop inside it where you can buy things without Apple getting a sweet, sweet cut. And they take, as a rule, 30% of anything that is bought within the App Store ecosystem. So that's their cut. This is, incidentally, the same as any store. So Steam takes a cut of any game sale. Epic's own store takes a cut of every game sale. That's kind of how the stores work. You can argue they take more or less, but that is the basis of the system. Epic put up a little thing which said, here, you can buy our in-app purchases through Apple or, immediately below, buy it direct from us for about $2 cheaper. And Apple went, no, that's a flagrant breach of our terms and conditions. Boot. And kicked them off. And then Epic's response. Epic's sick burn response, which is to post a, first of all, a statement, but secondly, a recreation of the 1984, yes, Dave, you're absolutely right, the 1984 video that Apple used, Apple Macintosh used back in the day, directed by Ridley Scott, no less, I should point out, which was a kind of take on the 1984 evil corporate overlord kind of thing, and someone walking up into the middle of the cinema screen and just lobbing something. I think, what did they lob in the original trailer? Was it like a keyboard or something? Was it some kind of Apple product?
I honestly can't remember.
Nowadays, it would be an iPhone, just like,
whoosh, yeah,
and then it smashed the cinema screen, and that's supposed to show like liberation against your evil corporate overlords. And they did a version of that only with Fortnite characters. And the thing with this one, right, is that everyone's like, what an own? And it's like, okay, right, fine. So the audience of everybody who plays Fortnite, generally speaking, is young. Young enough to not have a clue what that pastiche is pastiching. They've never seen that trailer. They've never seen the Ridley Scott trailer. And they probably haven't read 1984. So I don't know. How did you feel when you... First of all, just the trailer. What was your initial reaction? Did you throw out the horns for this epic win, or...
Oh my god. I guess I couldn't believe what I felt like was the levels of pettiness. This is the first time in my memory that a legal dispute has been so firmly pushed in front of the consumers.
Yeah.
I've never before seen anything pertaining to legal documents pushed in front of consumers. Even the fact that the official Fortnite account, which is, it's not Epic's account, it's the Fortnite account, it's, like you said, something, a brand that has a lot of young fans, even they're saying, hey, this is legal action against Apple, and that, the whole thing, is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. You couple that with how really, really tone-deaf the whole 1984 comparisons are, considering these are all multi-billion dollar companies. It's just... Oh my god.
Yeah, there's no way to position this as the little guy fighting the big guy. They're both really, really, really big guys. There's just no way around it. And they both have stores. And I realize that the Epic side of things has been, they've been complaining about the cut that Apple take, and they've been trying to court people, bring them over to their own Epic Game Store by saying, we'll take a much smaller cut. That's been their approach. They still take a cut, but less. So that's their way of kind of saying that they're standing up for the little guy and they're very pro-consumer. And it's like, all right, you're both playing the same game. You're just doing it to different degrees. You can argue about where the line is drawn, but you're still drawing a line, both of you, and doing the same thing. So the moral high ground is a little bit iffy, I would argue, on that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
As for the actual video stuff, I think it's cringe. The problem we have is that you're absolutely right when you say, like, pushing this in front of the consumer is mad. Because usually what happens is both the apps would disappear from both app stores because they're gone now. Then there would be some kind of statement saying that, like, as it stands at the minute, apps have been removed for some kind of legal differences. We are looking to remedy the situation. That would be it. And then we'd be sitting here wondering what went wrong. Instead, they had a trailer ready to go that they'd made clearly weeks before in the lead up to this. So, because they knew that this was going to happen, and it was all planned as this big event, and now they're throwing up screens in the game. And the idea is to kind of weaponize their young audience against Apple. Like, that's the only reason you put that stuff in the game, is to make your players go, what? They've taken it away? Ooh, that Apple! And try and, like, effectively, like, get a mob going. And I don't know if you've looked at games and gaming over the past half decade or so, but whipping up the gamers into an angry mob against anyone, really, or any cause they think they're fighting for, it's not worked out well.
And honestly, that is what has shocked me the most about all this. Like, having companies bicker with one another about like a minor fee that happens on their service, that happens all the time. That's why Uplay and Origin exists, you know? These disagreements happen. But putting it in front of the consumer, like having like this essentially army of young and impressionable fans on Twitter et al. Rail against Apple, completely insane. And the whole basis of it is pretty insane because we know why it's been removed from the App Store and Google Play, because it breaks the terms of service to disregard Apple's fees in that sense. Yeah. But then they say, we've only ever had the price this much because of the fees. And it's like, hold on, it's been like, you've had it on PC on your own Epic Game Store for how long? And the prices were that much. Mm-hmm. And only now are we saying, oh, this is only this price because of the fees. Now, look, we are able to give you a discount and it's all Apple's fault that we couldn't before. Utter nonsense. It's complete and utter nonsense. I do feel like there is an argument to be had over closed ecosystems and opening up your stores. And we've seen Apple doesn't want the competition from other services recently with xCloud, which we'll go on to later. So I feel like there's an argument to be had for that, but that is completely getting lost in whatever marketing nonsense that Epic is doing right now. To me, I kind of think to myself, is Fortnite just losing relevancy? Like, do they have the player numbers which say that it's losing hard and they need to do something to stoke up tensions? I don't quite understand.
That would be surprising, because it seems to be, you know, still the biggest thing ever, but who knows?
We don't have access to numbers. Obviously I don't feel like it's failing or anything, but
no.
This whole thing feels totally unwarranted, to be honest.
To be clear, like, there is truth in the argument that Epic is putting forward, right? The idea that, hey, Apple has this monopoly over its audience. It locks them in. It's very restrictive about what apps it allows you to have. It takes a large cut of the money from it. All of those things are true. Like, they're not lying there. They've got a point. I'm not keen on large corporate monopolies either. That kind of sucks. And if this was a small indie kind of complaining that, like, look, you're taking this huge chunk of my not very big revenue and I'm struggling to eat over here, and, you know, I think I'd have a good deal more sympathy, or you would feel like it was less cynical. What this is no, a company that's got the most popular game in the world at the moment and is raking in literally billions, going, oh, evil Apple, the big company making billions. You're like, have you looked in the mirror, Epic? Are you serious? Like, come on.
Yeah.
You're not the little plucky... You are that guy. You are the corporate billionaire overlord. Like, this is just the fight of the two big overlords. And as with Aliens versus Predator, whoever wins, we lose. That's how that works. But I do worry that there'll be a big offset of Fortnite players who gleefully jump on the opportunity to jump up and down on Apple's head. And it's a head that might be worth jumping up and down on, but not necessarily like this and in this way, and certainly not on behalf of Tim Sweeney. He's fine. He doesn't need your help. He's got his billions. He's okay. Yeah. So, but as we mentioned, it's not just Apple. Google's booted them as well. And there was a whole problem initially with them where when they first brought out Fortnite on Android, they were making you sideload it via their own Epic account, weren't they? Epic site.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, yeah, they wanted you to use the Epic Games app in order to load Fortnite and some other apps that are available on that service. I'm not sure there's that many. But that was, just like in this case, to get around the fact that microtransactions would Google take a fee if it was going through the Google Play Store. Even though it's gone from the Google Play Store, you still can just download it from the Epic Games app. That is still an option. So this has clearly always been a thing for Epic, where they want to make the most money out of what they have. And they've used examples of other apps on the services also being able to go around these fees. But the other apps on the services that usually do this are like shopping apps or food ordering apps. And it's like, well, yeah, the local restaurant isn't going to take 30% cut and give that to Apple, of course, you know, otherwise they just wouldn't do it on the app at all.
No.
But for digital goods, it makes sense. And Epic is trying to make themselves an exception just because they have one of the biggest games in the world.
And it gives them a lot of clout in terms of...
Yeah.
Certainly in terms of just, like, internet popularity and everything. Yeah, the idea that absolutely. You can rally a fan base around you, because you can frame this as Apple's taking your favorite game away from you. What are you going to do about it? And
I think that is what they're trying to do.
And I think the long game here is what they ultimately want, because they've said in the lawsuit statement, because this is they're suing now because of this, that they don't want any money. They're not suing for money, and they're trying to frame this as, and we're just trying to reduce Apple's monopoly and make them treat their clients fairly and all the rest of it. That's the angle.
Exactly the same thing they said about Steam when they did the Epic Game Store and had the lower cut they take from devs.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the end game that they have here is just they want the Epic Game Store on Apple. They want it on Google. They want just to have their own marketplace within all the app ecosystems so they can go direct to customers and, yeah, ultimately, again, make more money, because that is what this is about. So, like, Robin Hood, my nuts, frankly.
That is exactly what it is, as you said. This is just them wanting more of a cut of everything, whether it's Epic Games Store on PC, where they're being quite aggressive with exclusives and undercutting Steam, or whether it's the app on Android or what they want to happen on Apple. Yeah, it's all about wanting to secure market share for themselves, which, you know, I think... if this is a good capitalist society, there should be a free market and all that. But also, I don't like any of the methods being used.
No, they're doing what a large company does. That's like the thing that's we do. And to sort of flip it for a second and defend Epic briefly, the outcry that happened when they did the Epic Game Store and they got some of those exclusives and people were getting furious and why didn't they just put things on Steam and I have to download another installer now and oh my God. And it's like, come on, it's just a different, it's a click. You just click a slightly different box. Who cares if your library's in the same place? If it works for those developers and they're giving like huge payouts to make them exclusive to ensure that maybe smaller devs get to make their next game, then more power to them. I have no problem. I've got the Epic Game Store on here as well as Steam. I just click a slightly different thing. It's not that much of an inconvenience. The hate that they got for that was really bizarre and disproportionate as well, I thought.
I completely agree.
But yeah, I would be very careful about jumping on any weird bandwagons with this, because I don't think that it's as consumer or pro-consumer as you think it is. It's pro-Epic. It's their argument that they're making, and the argument that Apple is making is pro-Apple. Neither of them are making an argument for you or me. It sort of dovetails into something that we should be talking about in new releases, but already 20 minutes in, so we'll kind of... This will be the crossover thing, which is Game Pass. No longer Xbox Game Pass, but just Game Pass, because you can get it everywhere. You can do it on your PC, you do it on your Xbox, and you can do it on one of these. And that's what I was doing this week. I know it's what you were doing this week, Dave. And this ties into it because they did their beta. They beta'd it on iOS. They beta'd it on Android. And then they closed it down. And then now, if you've got the Xbox Ultimate Pass thingy, the top tier of their subscription, you can get access to what is the continued beta, if you like, or the early access thing, which limits it to, I don't know how many games there were. I didn't count. Probably should have.
I think there's like 30.
30, okay. So you don't get the full library, but you get a bunch of them. And if you've got an Android device and you've got that subscription, you can do it right now. You can get your Bluetooth controller hooked up, whatever it might be, third party Xbox One controller, doesn't matter. Get it plugged in and just download the app and boom, you're away, provided you've got the subs. Not on iOS though. Oh no, because it seems they've done their tests and now they're going to have to jump through 100 hoops. I mentioned it in the live video, in order to get it on the App Store. And I would not be surprised if there was some kind of synchronicity with this, where, like, you know, it not appearing on iOS, because clearly Apple's gone, actually, no, I'm not sure we want this, because if you're playing Xbox games on your iPhone, you're not playing iOS games on your iPhone, and we're not getting any money from this. So this is not in our interest.
Absolutely.
I reckon that, you know, if we can get a little bit of a groundswell of people going, what? And getting outraged at Apple. And now you've done Fortnite. Oh, my God. I feel like there's a momentum that they're trying to build up against them. But the actual experience of it. So you've probably played more or done more variety of stuff than me.
Sure.
How have you found it? How have you found the Xbox Game Pass experience on mobile?
I am... in general, just really surprised that it works as well as it does. And there is an article up on PocketGamer.com about me comparing my xCloud experience to Google Stadia from earlier this year. And my experience of Google Stadia on PC worked fine. Just it worked fine. On mobile, wasn't fine at all. Like whatever wireless latency was between here and my Wi-Fi router, as opposed to my wired PC, it hated it. I used it with xCloud, and suddenly it just all worked. I expected a similar experience, and xCloud just worked. I picked the game, it booted up, and instead of me sitting there thinking, I'm going to see how this works, I just played a level and forgot that it was streaming.
Yeah.
And for me, that was all I needed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't having any major problems with lag or latency. There was occasional stutters. Like, it wasn't absolutely perfect. You could tell it was a streamed game, but I could happily play for long periods of time on this. Maybe not with like a more action-heavy, Twitch-heavy titles, but...
Yeah, maybe not Street Fighter or something where it's frame
counting.
Yeah,
you definitely wouldn't want to have to deal with like an additional delay on top of what those sort of games already demand. And I definitely thought like my handling in like Forza Horizon wasn't as good as usual on PC, but considering what I was dealing with, I was like, this is 100% playable, and I'm impressed.
Well, I went through, because I was doing it for a video and amongst other things, so I basically went through different bits of the Halo. I just jumped straight to Halo because it's the default, you know,
Xbox thing. I did that first too, don't worry.
Yeah, so I flipped through a few different, you know, the different versions and 2 and 3 and Reach and that, just to see what it looks like, and then landed on just the anniversary for the video. But what other stuff you played? So Forza Horizon you had a go at?
Yeah. I had a good game at Hellblade.
Okay.
Yeah, I've already been playing that on PC, so I didn't play it for long, just sort of got through to the beach area, wanted to like make sure it was how it looked and how it ran, and again, really impressive. I feel like I came across my first like small issue, where some of the lighting was flickering in Hellblade.
Okay.
So, again, there are some things in there which aren't 100% perfect, but like it still looked and played so very good on the handheld. I had a very, very brief go of Ori. Jump around, see how that felt. And again, perfectly playable. My general experiences of it so far are, if you wanted to have the best experience of these games, you know, you'd download them to PC or Xbox.
Sure.
But if, for example, you wanted to try the first level before you downloaded it, or you were on lunch in the office, or in a hotel room somewhere, I feel like you mentioned that in your video.
Yeah.
This is a pretty darn good option.
That's the thing.
It's very convincing.
And that's the whole angle of the pitch of like, we want you to focus on the Game Pass thing as a subscription. That's what they want you to be interested in, it feels like. And yes, of course, the consoles themselves, they want to sell them and they want to beef up the fact that they're the most powerful, you know, 120 FPS, 8K, blah, blah, blah. Of course, that's an angle. And there will always be a connoisseur class in every hobby. I will only ever buy the full consoles, top spec, and you know, the right TVs and the Atmos surround sound and everything. And I feel like it's the same thing that, you know, if you collect vinyl or something rather than playing MP3s, you're that guy. And there's still an audience for it, but it's a niche audience, and the vast majority of people are just, you know, most probably just like listen to it on YouTube playlists. It's probably what they're really doing, even more than they are Spotify. But for the majority of people, I think this is a big, attractive thing. And for precisely that thing, not that it's necessarily your sole gaming device, but the additional, I've been playing it at home and then go to the office. Oh, I've got a half an hour lunch and I can just whack it out and pick up exactly where I left off, cloud saving in a way that genuinely works, and then just carry on at home. And that's effectively what the Switch does, albeit, you know, not streaming. That's how that works. And that's proved insanely popular.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good model to follow. The thing I haven't tried with this, because we've talked a lot about the positives and everything, the thing I haven't tried is to try and do it over 3G, 4G, 5G. And for a start, I don't know if that's available as an option at the moment.
I think so.
Is it? Because like that's the thing where you get tricky. Now, if you're stuck on any kind of data plan, if you're running this wirelessly, A, you're obviously going to have to be in a place where there's strong signal, and I imagine things like lag stuttering is going to be much worse. B,
yeah, you can't guarantee it'd be perfect.
No, exactly. And B, streaming video is bandwidth heavy, and no matter what compression they're using, and I think I think we looked into this for Stadia and Project X Cloud. They were talking about like 8 or 10 gig an hour. That's a lot on people's plans.
No, absolutely.
Unless you're unlimited or you know, if there's any kind of cap, that is a lot of data for an hour's play. So that's a problem.
Yeah.
So you're sort of reduced to, you probably better be hooked up to Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Which itself is restrictive, isn't it?
Yeah, no, and you're absolutely right. Like, having a good internet connection is going to be a problem because even ignoring data caps, been talking to Mr. Bold, Cameron Bold, earlier this week, and he's been playing xCloud as well, and he found it to work, but wasn't really acceptable. It's not to a level where he would play it regularly. Yeah. And that's because his internet connection had a 30 millisecond latency. I know that myself and you, I have like a 16 millisecond latency, you have like an 11 millisecond. Yeah. We've had really good experience with this. And it could be that the further you are away from your nearest like server center or whatever, this is going to become really problematic for you. And again, I really don't know how it's going to work over 4G, especially in places which have maybe not so great signal. Some people might be able to play it while going down the motorway in the back seat. Some people might not be able to at all.
Even in their own houses.
Like, yeah, yeah. The advent of 5G will probably smooth that out a lot.
Yeah.
But we will see.
It's a long game kind of thing. That's why
it absolutely is.
This is the baby
steps. It's like you said. It's like you said. Like, this is one of those things that you add into like a whole package. Because I already had Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, and I was playing it. I was playing Halo Master Chief Collection. I was playing Streets of Rage 4 and some other things on my PC. I don't even have an Xbox One, but I feel like it's a good price to sub for like 1 or 2 months.
Yeah.
Play some of the games you like on it, and then unsub. I feel like it's a really good service for that. The xCloud beta just came up in the middle of that, and I was just sat there like, I was already pleased with the level of value that I was getting out of this with just a PC. If I actually did also have an Xbox One and then this fell into my lap, this is pretty incredible compared to a similar price subscription which just gets you Stadia.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not with games included. That's with, like, you know, you have to pay for most of the games separately on Stadia. So when it comes to being a value proposition, if you already have like a PC and Xbox One, this is pretty incredible, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, we mentioned in the video that, like, obviously Sony are going to be trying to do this with their PlayStation Now. We haven't seen a reveal of it, but I know they were working with Microsoft on the server tech. I remember prior to xCloud, when it was just announced, there was chat about them sort of contacting each other and doing a little confab. So clearly PlayStation Now is going to do something similar. Stadia is already out there and maybe floundering a bit because of the whole no games thing, which is a bit of a problem. This is something that we're seeing the beginning of. And then once everybody, or once internet across the land is boosted up a little bit, when 5G appears, because the download speeds on that are ridiculous, like quantum leap ridiculous, where people are doing tests and it's like, oh, you're pulling down 600 just standing in the middle of a field. You're like, right. Suddenly this whole latency thing doesn't become such an issue when you got that. But that's another, you know, let's talk 5 years, 10 years for when everybody gets good access to this kind of internet. Then suddenly it's a whole different game, and the idea of consoles and hardware being the places where you play stuff becomes daft, in the same way that VHS players seem antiquated to the Netflix user. And this is something that goes in line with what I read recently, which is, I'm a big 4K guy, as in I actually have been doubling down on buying 4Ks, right? Because for a while, when this first came out, it's like, this is going to be it, isn't it? If I actually want to ever own a movie again, this is the last chance. Blu-ray and 4K is going to be the last physical media thing for movies, I think.
Very possible.
So I was like, right, no, I'm going to buy more. And even early on, it was clear from the stats that people are not buying 4K Blu-rays. They're not selling. It hasn't taken off. Blu-rays are still okay-ish, but this is the end. And Disney came out this week with the reveal that they are no longer going to be making 4K DVDs, 4K Blu-rays of their live-action Disney content. They're just stopping it.
Yeah.
And that means for the Fox movies as well, because they own Fox. Now, apparently they have a special deal with James Cameron where it doesn't apply.
Of course they do.
Because I need my Aliens 4K, Dave.
Yeah.
I need it. But apart from that, like, that's the first big player which has gone, yeah, we're going to abandon the latest physical media because we've got Disney Plus. We know you're going to stream it. We know you're not going to buy it. It's a waste of time. So off you go. Which is obviously the future. And there you go. Game Pass, same thing. Don't download it. Just let us deal with it for you. Just plug your thing in. It'll be fine. We'll take it off your hands for you. Don't worry.
And you do sort of see that in Sony's court as well, the fact that they're launching the PS5 alongside a digital version, which I'm assuming is going to be quite a bit cheaper.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So both of them are going to be tiered with a discless version, and people are going to, you know, inevitably want to buy that one.
Yeah.
Because it costs less.
I do not want to lose out on physical games, but the it's certainly going that way. I'm not unhappy with necessarily like the proposition of like a Netflix of gaming, you know. But games are such a weirdly unique medium where the formats could basically die out, you know. Like PS1 games can genuinely all stop working one day, whereas movies are so easily transposed to new formats. So that's one thing that makes me nervous about the digital future of video games, you know. Like,
there's an archiving problem with movies as well. Like, most mediums have this really big archiving problem. Yeah, celluloid is still the best way to archive a film. Because when you take something like something that was shot on digital in the early days, take the prequels, right? So you've got your Star Wars prequels. They were shot on very, very early 1080p cameras, digital cameras.
Oh, okay.
So you have a situation where that's the best that will ever look. It was shot at 1080p by 1920 pixels. That is it. You can upscale it algorithmically. You can use upscaling technology to smooth off some of the edges, but you can't go in and rescan that image at 4K or 8K or 16K. Yeah, sure. Because it's just going to be 1080, because all you're doing is enlarging the pixels that are already there. There's no hidden information.
Mm.
Whereas film, you can keep going back like they've been doing. All remasters are done by, hey, they take a 35mm print and then they scan it initially at 720, then at 1080. Then now they've been going back and doing 4K scans. And every time you rescan it, there's more information because it's analog, because it's literally just a chemical reaction with light.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is still technically the best way of archiving film for future preservation. But it's a problem because celluloid can degrade and in exposure to air or light or whatever, and it starts to corrode and it becomes damaged. Whereas if you store it as like, you know, everything's like an MP4 file, right? In 50 years' time, we won't be able to read MP4s. That's not going to be a format. That won't be a thing. So suddenly all those MP4s will be useless, in the same way that like I could just go around to my niece's house with my... Hang on. I don't know if I still have them. I do! Awesome! I'll go around to my niece's house with my VHS of the original Nightmare on Elm Street. Oh, look at it. Oh. And I'll say, here, go whack that on. And she'll just look at me in that okay boomer way that she should. And be like, what am I supposed to... What's this? What's this plastic book? What? And there'll be no VHS. There'll be no way to watch that. So we're going to have that issue. Yeah. And we do have that issue with games because, you know, that Nintendo leak with all their ROMs appearing online. It's because we have a preservation problem where, unless you have a SNES and an original version of the cartridge somewhere, you can't run it. So the ROMs become
More difficult. Like, honestly, the Nintendo leaks for me highlighted how good Nintendo have been with a lot of this stuff, considering they have source code for a lot of those titles from the mid-90s. Because you look at, like, Square Enix, and they've been like... Source code for Final Fantasy 7, 8, and 9? No idea.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? The Silent Hill remaster was so bad precisely because of that. It's like, here's some discs. We've got some of the code. And then the rest,
stick it together.
And you're like, you lost Silent Hill 2 in pure, like, day-to-day. You've lost the news. Like, but Silent Hill 2... Monsters. And so you got the no fog cut of Silent Hill. Interesting times. However, so like this has been a very long news section. We have a very small bit at the end about the new releases. But the broad strokes of this was that I was like you, surprised that it worked, Game Pass. It's a genuinely impressive feat. Few things to be concerned about. Now they're going to have to worry about optimizing games for being played on a tiny little screen. Console games are obviously optimized to be played on large-ish.
Yes.
So you're now going to have the issue where the small numbers are going to be teeny tiny. So are they going to start optimizing console games to work on mobile now?
Yeah. On that note, before we move on, I've turned my Wi-Fi off and turned on Halo, and it does just about work.
Like, there you go.
I think you can kind of see there's a little bit of split-second delay between my thumb moving and the screen, but that is not on Wi-Fi. That's running on 3G. My 4G connection. So
okay.
So it works. Live test. That is acceptable, I would say.
But if you are listening and you have you're already on Ultimate, give this a go, because this is a fascinating little glimpse into what is probably the future. And I can see that it's not necessarily saying that's a good thing. Like, we'll have to wait and see. And there are lots of problems with it. And most of those problems are around them turning around at some point and going, okay, we've just removed this game from the system, from the service because of reasons. And you're like, oh, but I was in the middle of that and I can't. So, all right, I'll just go and buy the fit. Oh, no, there isn't a physical copy anymore. There's just... So it's just gone now?
Yeah.
That's the thing I'm concerned about. Same thing with the film, same thing with music and Spotify, same thing with everything.
Absolutely.
They turn off the tap.
Yeah, I'm really happy that like there have been a few game publishers recently, like Limited Run Games and Super Rare Games, which are doing physical releases of certain indie titles and even some bigger titles like Deadly Premonition Origins. I think that was Numbskull Games. But yeah, that's really, really nice to see, you know? Like, someone out there cares, and there are definitely enough fans out there to buy up all these copies every time they do get released.
Absolutely. And there are downsides to physical, because it's a lot of wasteful plastic. I like the fact that digital is comparatively green in some ways, but then there's obviously the server and all the heat and everything, so it's not completely green, but landfills not being full of, like, jewel cases, good thing.
Yes.
Art disappearing off the face of the planet because someone arbitrarily flicks a switch, not so good, so...
Yeah.
We'll see how this one plays out. Out and about this week, Neverwinter Nights Enhanced Edition. We'll start here. So this is the redux, the redo of the original RPG thing that was released. God knows when. Is this an early, late 90s, early noughties thing? Like, how old is this?
I think so. I'm honestly...
Because this is post Baldur's Gate and all that kind of stuff. This is the early venture into the 3D RPG business, but set in that Neverwinter Nights universe. And now I know you've played the PC version of this.
I played a little bit of the enhanced edition, yeah.
How did it translate to a modern RPG fan?
So, like, one of my favorite RPGs of all time is actually Dragon Age Origins. Yeah, which basically runs on, like, a much, much, much more advanced version of the engine that Neverwinter was founded on. That engine also powered games like The Witcher 1 and a whole bunch of classic RPGs that were built for PC and very rarely appeared on console. And so I was really hoping to go into this and have my nostalgia tickled in this little, weird little way. And to an extent, that happened. But this game's real old.
Yes.
And it's like when you grew up with really archaic and difficult things, you're like, this is fine. This is how it's supposed to be. And then when things improve over time and you go back, you're like, oh my God, why do we do this to ourselves?
100 plus hours of gameplay though, Dave. 60 of which are you screaming at the screen because you have to redo this quest a billion times.
Yeah, I think it might look a little bit better on the small screen though, because like when you've blown it up to like a 4K screen, you see that like a lot of the character models is limbs and ears aren't attached to them.
Yeah.
And they're like literally like one or two polygons sometimes, but tickles that nostalgia just little bit. If you really want an old school RPG to play, why not?
Well, I never played this one, so I can't comment. And we've got the trailer up and everything, and yes, of course it looks desirably yank. It's on iOS and Android. It's going to be a premium release. I'm not quite sure what they're charging for it offhand. This is going to be one for the fans. I'm not sure how many new people will wander into this.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to convince anyone to pick up Neverwinter Nights for the first time, unfortunately.
No, but certainly worth a look, and go and check out the stuff we've got up on it over at pg.com. Now, speaking of things coming over from PC onto mobile, Eve has appeared. Now, to me, Eve is one of these things that I'm aware of as an industry unto itself, I suppose. It's this entire cosmic world that they've created with an infrastructure and a bureaucracy, and it's almost like a second job for a lot of people, and they have all of their guilds and communities, and it's run like actual business, and it's a crazy big thing and just insanely intimidating. I like my space business. I'm an elite man myself. That's what I go for. I'm a one-man industry. I don't form big alliances with people. And I understand the idea of these incredibly granular games where, I mean, with Elite, even like taking off and docking and doing that stuff is kind of like an achievement at the beginning because it's such a ball ache to do every single part of it. So I understand the draw and I love the sci-fi aspect. I've never tried to do it because the business aspect always put me off a little. Eve Echoes has appeared online. And this is... doing something slightly different within the EVE universe. It's a big old MMO RPG that they've gone for.
Mamorpaga.
I've played it for about an hour. You've played it, I think, maybe a little bit longer. And this, to a lesser degree, is the what I perhaps expected when I would start to play EVE, which is I'd suddenly see an awful lot of menus. And a little tutorial would walk me through them bit by bit by bit. You click this, then this, then this, and then drop down to this bastard column, subsection B, and you hit this, and that, and that, and that happens. And I'm like, yes! And then it goes, okay, cool, now go and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, but I can't even remember. What? What? Huh? I'm just floating in space like this.
Yeah.
So,
it's mobile game tutorials. But anyway, EVE is, I think it's one of those games which I've always been fascinated by. Like, I remember, like, a decade ago, looking at the EVE store page and, like, just wondering what kind of game it really was. And 10 years later, still not all that sure. And every new store I hear makes me more confused. And now I got into EVE Echoes. And again, like you said, did the tutorial. And I don't know, I docked at a ship and I had some gifts for logging in. And then I went to a planet and I didn't have mining tools. And then I saw a gunship. So I shot a laser and I died. And then I had a crime countdown, which said I couldn't play.
Crimes, space crimes. Yeah. I've been there with Elite Man, though. They're very strict about that, too.
Yeah, space crimes are brutal.
Yeah. So, on the plus side here, quite good looking. Did you get the stutter? There's quite a lot of stutter that occurs every about 3 or 4 seconds with this.
You know what? Actually, my experience is pretty smooth.
Okay.
I gotta say, it was looking really good. And I was really impressed with the visuals. You know, space looks nice. And I love the sense of scale when you're up against, like, a space station or something. Very cool and impressive.
It looks decent. I was running it on an iPhone 10, and it was a little bit stuttery, which I was surprised at. But you can change tweak graphics options, so that's there. Yeah. It does give you the sense of scale. You're not in direct control of your ship, i.e. you're not flying it with dual sticks. It's very much a... do you want to dock, go into the thing, choose the space station, choose the docking option, boof, and then your ship will bank around. And it's up to you to kind of zoom in, zoom out, and see what you want to see, really. And the same goes for combat. If you want to get into fights with people, you're targeting them, you're saying, go, do the shooting. And then you watch just the little lower right-hand corner, you've got your weapons that you can equip in, and pew, pew, and it just ticks over of its own accord. So it really is about the grandest sweep of it all. It's more of a space management thing than it is an actual, you know, in the cockpit, X-Wing Squadrons kind of dealio. But if you knew EVE, you knew that already. I mean, I'm sure you weren't expecting anything else. I can't comment as to how, like, dumbed down this is versus EVE. I can only imagine, even with its complexity, it's very simplified. And I can see EVE fans going, poof, at this.
Yeah, totally.
But I don't know. Like, I can't comment. I haven't played the original. I can tell you it's available. I can tell you it's free to download.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say.
Yes, I believe so.
Good, yeah. Pretty sure. It was on the account. Yeah. So it was all free to me. But yeah, I believe it's free to download. And despite the initial kind of like, ugh, I don't quite. I think that the tutorial could have been stronger, but I think that you're right that most mobile games, free-to-play mobile games, it's just a load of, like, text pops up, and you go, okay, just go away, okay, and then it's gone, and then that's it. And they don't do a good job of, like, teaching you through play. It's just, like, throwing a big PDF at you and saying, read this, okay, go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily great. But maybe it's the beginning of something.
Start something good.
There are a couple of other things that came out this week. So, Circulus. This is something that Dan's played a bunch of. And it's a puzzle game. I took a brief look at it. So it's very simple, graphically speaking. But there's VO stuff. The idea is that it's going to be a long-running game. So this is the first chapter of a few that are supposed to appear. And then it's going to be a bunch of little mini-games, item discovery, wandering around, seeing what happened. I don't know what the plot is. You can see a video for it up at the moment. It's iOS only, and it's premium. But it looks like it has potential. It looks like it's got a lot of variety, at least, because you're constantly, from the footage that I've seen, switching between unlocking door codes, going through people's emails, and, you know, beyond the usual point-and-click rummaging around and rubbing objects against each other thing. iOS only at the minute, and I think it's £3.99 to buy the whole game. and then you'll get these chapter installments dished out over time. Oh, this is something else I've played. The Machine's Garden. We covered this on Launchpad. I played it on PC. This is actually quite neat in very lo-fi presentation. It's essentially one of those games where you have to cover, bless you, where you have to cover up, trigger, I guess, all of the pads, all of the hexes on screen by drawing a line through them, Snake style. And like Snake, you can't go back on yourself. So once you've drawn the line, you can't then go do and get to the other side. So you need to basically fill up the screen by going do, and then fantastic, you've completed the level. So it's a pathfinding thing to find the only route you can to cover up or to illuminate every single tile. Don't know if you played it. Have you seen it? Played it?
I can't say I have. It does look interesting, though. I like really basic, colourful puzzle games. So
yeah. Well, it does the thing which is like the core idea is very obvious and it doesn't teach you, really. It just lets you go and it's self-explanatory. Yeah. That's really good. And the things that they throw in, beyond just like you start here and you need to get to here, bang, you've done it. It starts throwing in things like the barriers appear, so you can only get to this area via, you know, avoiding it and going the long way around. You start to get things like a warp platform, so some of the hexes teleport you from there to over there. But the chain continues, the snake's tail continues to grow from where it was. And it's quite easy to backtrack once you've realized you fluffed it. You basically go back and touch anywhere on your tail, if you like, and it goes and pulls back to where you were. So it's got that very easy to restart and try and readjust and have another run, which is very, very appealing. And there is this kind of meta story that's going on in the background where you're effectively the panels, these things that you're seeing are like the diodes or the circuit boards of this sleeping computer who has no memory. And you're kind of reawakening it gradually by doing it.
Like it.
Did about 10 levels. Quite fun. Quite lo-fi. Okay. Quite enjoyed it. Premium. Available on the App Store only at the minute. No Google Play release. But maybe go and have a look. And the final thing that Dan has thrown in here is robotics! ! And I should have looked at this closer, but I didn't. This has been done by Zeptolab, who made one of my favorite all-time mobile games, which is Cut the Rope, which remains a classic to this day. And this is about robot battling. This is Robot Wars, baby. In so much as you have to build the robots by taking little bits and pieces and assembling these weird robot structures, and then you go and make them do battle.
I'm just looking at it now, and what else do you need?
No.
It's robot Pokemon. Let's go.
Yes, only apparently you teach it commands so you can like effectively trigger animations for it. So if you've got a little, the example they use in the trailer is if you've got a little bipedal two-legged one and then he's got a little attack rod up here, you can record a movement. So it's like record and then you go, I want it to attack like this. I drag back and then I go, bleh, and you're literally controlling the arm doing that. And so that when you go into battle, when you press attack, it does that exact movement, which is quite neat. And I like Zeptolab for what they've done. I'm going to play this. I may video myself playing this and see what it's like. But
beautiful.
Free to download Google Play and the App Store right now. That'll do us for this week, I think. I think we covered a lot. Dave, this has been an absolute pleasure.
I'm really glad to have been here. I'm really happy that it all worked out. I didn't swear.
Well, yeah, no. There is no swearing on this. Occasionally something will slip out, but, you know, depends how heated. Is that what they call a heated gamer moment? Or does it have to be have heavy, like, racial connotations for it to be a heated gamer moment?
No comment.
There you go. Avoiding a heated gamer moment like a true pro.
You see, that's all Epic needed to say. They need to say no comment. They didn't need to put out 1980 Fortnite.
But the sick burn, Dave. These sick burns.
Was it that sick? I don't know.
Okay, so we'll wind it up now. Thank you all for watching and listening out there in the wider world. Do come back and join us. And Dave, I will insist that you return and join us again in future. This has been fun.
I'd love to.
Catch you next week for more. Bye-bye.